up with great skill from him. To England, Mo Salah! Raheem Sterling! What a finish! What pure class from the Englishman!
Premier Talk, the English Premier League podcast for the fans.
Hello and welcome back to the Premier Talk podcast. I'm one of your two hosts, as always, Andrew Mello. Alongside with me is Danny B, Danny Barbudo. Daniel, episode 14 of season 14. Three. We're going to call this one Coutinho Returns. And for good reason, Coutinho had a banging week this week in the Premier League. Fantastic match. Things are looking very good at Aston Villa right now.
I love Aston Villa right now. The team looks nuts. Although the draw this week wasn't exactly the result that they wanted, the players on this squad are going to be such a nice fit. I love Coutinho back in the Prem. I love Digne on this side. I love it. Inject it into my veins. I love it.
Daniel, you look hyped for that. But anyways, let's kick it off and let's get into the starting lineup here. Let's kick off with the games of the week.
Then we're going to go new segment alert. Potato of the week, or as I like to say, patate of the week.
And then we're gonna get into another segment called player position changes. So it's gonna be a good one.
Kick us off. Games of the week. We got two games on Tuesday, two games on Wednesday, February 8th and February 9th. The first game, and we're only talking about this because of how disappointing it was. Burnley versus Manchester United. 1-1 draw. Absolutely mudded. This club is just mudded right now. We are a mudded club. We got Varane. He scored first. A few minutes in, I think it was like a 10th minute, he scored a goal. A lovely header, by the way, off a set piece. It would have been United's first set piece goal of the year, which is disgusting. He scored. It was ruled out by VAR because Maguire was coming from an offside position and banged into the defender. It was brutal. I was watching this game. I was snapping. I was literally snapping. Because when a player on a set piece, you always have the one player that starts in an offside position. They always come back onside. It happens every single set piece. I don't understand why United was penalized for this. I didn't understand why VAR intervened at all, to be completely honest. It was just brutal,
well,
in my opinion.
In that sequence, Maguire got pushed. He got pushed back onside. He really didn't have a complete control of his momentum, really, in that play. I thought it was pretty interesting how they overturned it. I was messaging you, Daniel, throughout the entirety of that game pretty much. And it was pretty funny because I would say, come on, United, like they scored, and then goal overturn. Come on, United. Yeah. Pogba, foul, goal overturn. It was just a funny game for United. Another poor result. There were some rumors swirling around.
No, hang on. Going back. Pogba's goal, it wasn't. There was a foul, but they didn't actually overturn the goal. The one on Pogba's goal was a goal.
Okay.
They were looking at it, but it was never actually overturned.
No, there's one in the second half later on that he smacked. I can't remember whose face he smacked in the box. I can't remember who it was now.
It was Thingy, and then Cavani tapped it in.
Yes.
Overturned. So, that one was overturned. Yes.
That was the one I was talking about. But going back to what I heard in this week in terms of news, they're comparing Ralf Rangnick's assistant coach to the likes of Ted Lasso.
I saw that.
Former TFC man too. Former Toronto FC manager.
I don't understand how a TFC manager is in the Premier League, but that's a whole other story.
Poor Bruce.
I saw that.
Poor Bruce.
I don't know how I feel about that. But anyways, moving on. Pogba gave Manchester United a lead, like we said, 18 minutes in. It was a pullback from Shaw. It was a nice pass, nice finish. Nothing really to complain about. And the whole first half, United had chance after chance after chance after chance after chance to score and to put this game to bed. Game would have been done. It would have been 2-0, 3-0. Game would have been over. Burnley would have headed home. And that's it. But they didn't capitalize on their chance. Coming back from halftime, Jay Rodriguez, he scored in the 47th minute with a white horse assist, a new signing. And that tied the game right there. Like Mello said, there was a Cavani goal that was overturned because Pogba like slapped the guy in the face. Accidentally, but he did. And one other talking point in this game, Ronaldo got subbed on late for, I believe it was for Cavani. I think that's who they subbed him in for. He's on a 5-game drought right now, and it's the longest in his career, I think since like 2010, something ridiculous, something stupid. It's such a Ronaldo stat.
The Manchester United effect.
Yeah. And he's been he hasn't been good when he's coming on, but like every single game he started, every single game he hasn't started, they've never won. I think that's the stat. Something ridiculous. Like he's such an important player on the side that like I don't understand how he's not starting. I don't get it.
I mean, I was scratching my head again to not see Ronaldo in the lineup. It was just another week where you could have had him in there and you could have had him starting, you know, with alongside the likes of Rashford and Sancho. And, you know, Cavani is a great player, but he's not Ronaldo. Even at 37, he's not Ronaldo. And Ronaldo just has an effect on the game, the ability to, you know, draw away defenders, create space for his wingers. Because that's the presence he brings to this team. And for him not to be starting, it's another frustrating moment, I guess, for him and a lot of United fans. Because that's the reason why they brought him in, to be that guy. And right now, he's not finding himself in the lineup against teams like Burnley and these lower side teams when I think he should be playing regardless because it's the Premier League. So put your best lineup out there week in, week out.
Yep. I completely agree. Anyways, that was a blunder by United there. They picked up the 1 point, which doesn't help them in the top four race. Burnley, sitting in relegation, helps them massively, picking up 1 point against a team like United. Anyways, done talking about that. Newcastle, Everton.
Yo, Kieran Trippier, man. He had a game.
Kieran Trippier, game and a half. Everton, I believe, is like 16th or 17th, and Newcastle is sitting just inside relegation, 18th. Newcastle came out, won this one, 3-1. There was an own goal from each side. Just a minute apart. It was
Jamal Lassell scored one in his end, then he got the equalizing goal a couple of minutes later.
But it was an own goal on that one too.
That one was an own goal too. Yeah,
but it was Lassell's.
It was Lassell's.
Yeah. It was Lassell's. Anyways, so he kind of contributed in both goals, except one was in his own net. It was 1-1, 37 minutes in. Then you got Ryan Fraser coming into this Newcastle side this year from Bournemouth, and he put Newcastle ahead in the 56th minute, and then Kieran Trippier with a lovely free kick. The free kick was ridiculous. It was a ridiculous free kick. He sealed the 3 points in the 80th minute, gave Newcastle a massive 3 points in the relegation stint.
He was also responsible for the cross on the Lascelles goal, if you want to credit Lascelles with it, in the first half. So a very talented set-piece specialist. And he brings something that Newcastle was missing in terms of set pieces. Additionally, he brings some leadership back there as well. So I think the fit so far for Kieran has been good. I think it's been the right fit for him in Newcastle, coming back into the Premier League and trying to reestablish himself in the Premier League. And for Newcastle, just a massive, massive win. For Everton, it's two L's under Frank Lampard.
Frank Lampard, yeah.
So I'm not blaming Frank. It's just a tough situation for any manager to come in, step in into that environment and try to change things around. It's going to be very difficult for Frank. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Very interesting.
Another massive game. These two games happen on Wednesday, February 9th. We've got Tottenham versus Southampton. Southampton won this one 3-2 after Tottenham was leading 2-1 70 minutes in. We got Bednarek scoring an own goal in the 18th minute, putting Tottenham up 1-0. And then Broja, what a great name. He equalized 5 minutes later.
That kid is underrated, man. He's so good. So talented. Such a good hold-up striker with a great ability to play the ball and score the ball. I'm just hoping Chelsea, you know, brings him back because he belongs to Chelsea. He's on loan now.
He's on loan.
The Albanian man. He's got some potential, that kid, man. He's got some real potential. I've been watching him play, and he always finds himself impacting the game in one way or another, and I really like the way he plays. Very, very hungry attitude he brings to the game. I really like it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And then we got Tottenham. So at this point, it was with that Broja equalizer, 1-1. Heung-min Son, he scores for Tottenham, looking like Tottenham's going to go on to win the game. They're up 2-1. In the 79th minute, you got El Yunusi scoring, and then in the 82nd minute, you got Che Adams scoring. And that puts Southampton up 3-2. The latest drama ever, and this guy loves late drama, Steven Bergwijn, he scored what looked to be an equalizer. Nuts. Everybody's going nuts. I love when he scores late goals. It's fantastic.
That's so sad. Like, Tottenham's going nuts. They're going nuts to, like, tie game they just blew, like a lead blew. That's the mentality right now for Tottenham.
But if you look at it, like, they're not even doing that poorly because, like, they still have a few games in hand because of the big COVID situation.
Yeah.
And if they win a few games, they could easily rival top four. Easily.
Yeah, but then they're dropping points here, Dan. And that's my problem with this club. And then, you know, for them to go and score the quote-unquote equalizing goal, which, you know, it ended up being overturned, and go that nuts after you blew a game, just shows the level of the club.
I mean, Conte likes going nuts when they score to make it 1-0 5 minutes into the game.
Yeah, and then he was celebrating when they're up. And then a couple minutes later, they're losing. I thought it was hilarious. Oh,
that guy's nuts. That guy's a nut job. I love him, though. What a great manager. And that was it for the Southampton-Tottenham game. Crucial points dropped for Tottenham. And moving on to the last game of the week.
Best game of the week.
Best game of the week.
This was a banger of a game, man.
Aston Villa versus Leeds. This one ended 3-3.
Vintage Felipe, man. Vintage.
Vintage Felipe. And you see Dan James just oozing confidence. I love it.
Yeah. Where was he for United, man?
He was a little pacey little rat around, like, to run up the sidelines, and that's about all he did. He scored a couple goals here and there. He usually got subbed on late when they were winning like 9-0, like we did against Southampton, and then we just scored one. And
he wasn't getting the minutes though. He's getting out.
He was not. At Leeds, he plays every game now, basically.
Yeah, he's a focal point, especially with Patrick Bamford not firing the way he was last year. Yeah, so he's definitely picked up the slack for Bamford.
And Dan James was the one to kick off the scoring in this one in the 9th minute. Lovely strike through the legs. I believe it was Konsa.
Nice finish.
Lovely finish.
Yeah.
And then you got vintage Coutinho. He scored in the 30th minute.
Man, that touch. That touch top box. That was gross.
Oh, just lovely.
Settled it so neatly. He got his body back over on the ball and cross goal. Man, what a finish. What a neat finish. Mm-hmm. And the commentary was A1 steak sauce.
It was nuts commentary. I love that guy. He
sprinkled his Brazilian magic all over Villa Park.
Yeah, it was nuts. And then Coutinho, after his goal, he assists Jacob Ramsey twice in 5 minutes, 38th minute and 43rd minute. Both passes were stupid. The first one was a ridiculous through ball. The second one was just a vision of him waiting for Ramsey to overlap him, and he did. Both those goals. And we thought that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say,
Ramsey's not a striker, man. And this guy knows how to finish. He's got a great ability to finish the ball. And, you know, if he wasn't on the map at the start of the season, he is now. That guy's a fantastic player. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, by the end of the season, a top six club's looking for him. Hopefully he stays around, because this duo between him and Felipe right now is just
looking just dangerous.
Yeah, they're dangerous, man.
His second finish I liked. Like, because I know as a striker, when I'm running and you have a defender coming across goal, I look at either two things. Finishing short post, which a lot of players don't like to do, especially because the goalie is usually leaning that way, or trying to put the ball through the defender's legs when he stretches across. And he just, no hesitation, ripped it short post, top shelf.
Yeah,
it was nuts. It was a lovely finish. And then after that, to put them up 3-1, you thought this first half couldn't get any more ridiculous. Dan James scores again. It was not a great goal. The ball bounced up and he was just standing underneath it on the goal line waiting to header it in, and he got basically sandwiched. But a goal is a goal. And it was 3-2 at this point. And then you got Diego Llorente, the big center back. He scores off just garbage. Daniel, but it was a goal line clearance. So I'm not even it was a goal line clearance for me.
He's falling back, but he just scuffed it and it was supposed to be a clearance out of the box, and it just landed right to the feet of Llorente. I think Tyrone Mings really costed Villa 3 points here. I think he could have done a better job of clearing the ball. And just two out of the three goals for Leeds were these scrappy goals and lack of man marking in the box and clearing of the ball. Like it's poor, Daniel. It's poor because it really undermines the performances of Felipe, Coutinho, and Ramsey, because they had a fantastic game and they really helped this team on the offensive side of the game. But, you know, in terms of the defensive aspect of the game, it was very poor inside the box. I don't know. That's what I think costed Villa 3 points here.
I think Konsa did. Because I think...
Yeah.
I know it was later on in the game. I know at that point it was already 3-3.
Silly challenge.
Stupid.
Yeah, just dumb. Like,
so unneeded. For those of you who didn't, Konsa was already on a yellow, and then Meslier caught the ball off a set piece, and then Konsa just grabbed him by like the neck, like upper chest area, and just drag him to the floor.
Because the keeper tried to play quick.
Yeah, and he was stopping a counterattack.
Yeah.
And then Konsa couldn't believe that he got a second yellow for that. Like he stood there in awe. Like it wasn't the easiest yellow the refs ever given his entire career. Yeah. It was just ridiculous. Anyways, those are the four games of the week. Four ridiculous games. I know we only kind of talked about United game because they're in the mud, but whatever. I love people on the graphics.
Daniel.
Hang on, I got to shout out some fans in Premier Talk. Who was it? I think it was, I'm going to shout out, I don't even know who it was. I think it was Austin. Shout out Austin Deachin, if you listen to the podcast. This guy comments, Barbs, don't you love making graphics for United when they blunder games like this? And I was ready to throw my phone out the window. I was so angry. I was making this graphic. I was like, oh my God, these guys are tying to Burnley. Anyways, shout out Austin for that comment.
It's tough right now, eh?
It is tough. It's a tough time.
You know, I want to shout out my club, Chelsea. 1-0 scrappy win for the Club World Cup, FIFA Club World Cup, out in Dubai.
I can't believe Prem teams are in that.
You know, I'm not going to get into the formatting for the Club World Cup. It's always usually the big team in Europe that wins it. Rarely. I don't even know the history of it.
Maybe Europa League once.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's just very, I don't know.
It's a weird format. I don't know why they would even make. I don't know. It's for me. It's like a useless trophy that you get the fans to go. Oh, we got another trophy. Like, wow, you're playing Al Jaber in Saudi Arabia. Like, why is that? Why are you regarding that as a massive trophy? Shouldn't be. Yeah. Anyway, it's a whole other story.
Daniel,
new segment time.
New segment of the week. New segment for the podcast in general. You know, we were brainstorming.
Up that.
We got a new segment called Potato of the Week, man.
Potato of the Week.
For those of you listening, you know, what's a potato? What's a potato of the week? You know, we're talking about a couch potato. Like, you know, had a bad performance, you know, during the news for all the wrong reasons.
So. Yep.
That's sort of the criteria we're looking for potato of the week, and there was many candidates for this
year. There was
big Konsa that we mentioned earlier, but
yeah,
guy in the
Konsa,
who
Harry Maguire,
you go with Harry Maguire? Gabriel,
no, Konsa, Harry Maguire, all three of these players are just mudded this week. They're just ridiculous. You got Harry Maguire doing absolutely nothing against everything. What did that guy do? He did absolutely nothing, and he was the reason why they scored.
Yeah, Weghorst absolutely destroyed him.
You got Konsa. Yeah, Weghorst. He's like 6'8". He's dribbling around Maguire like Maguire is in a fridge, going up against the fridge.
But, yo, David De Gea made a massive save on him in the second half. Crazy save.
That volley?
Yeah, that was nuts.
Dirty, too.
That was good.
So, we got Maguire. We got, for just being invincible the entire game, we got Konsa for his second yellow for just dragging down Mesley for no reason. And then you get Gabriel Martinelli.
I'm going to have to go with Martinelli.
I'm gonna have to go with Martinelli too.
You know,
two yellows in the same
play. You know, a lot of fans were complaining about the double yellow card for the same play, but for once in a long time, a referee's made a fantastic.
Ref had to go like this after the game.
Yeah, fantastic decision by Michael Oliver. It was Arsenal and Wolves, a critical game. Arsenal, obviously, they're sitting in fifth now with that win. They retain that position. Wolves just are right behind them in eighth. It was like a 4-point difference now, I think, after that game. But it was a game that either teams would have loved to win because they're fighting for Europa League places. They're fighting for a place in Europe for next season. Both teams are really trying to step it up here after the January window. So there's a lot of
stake. Yeah, with Arsenal, zero signings. They love it.
A lot of stake here. 1-0, Gabriel put them up, the center back, the Brazilian center back put them up. And so there's a play where Wolves was really starting to get the momentum, man. But that's went for the throw-in. Martinelli, similar to what Cohen said, that he
pushed them.
But then still got it off the throw-in, found his way to Chiquinho, the new Portuguese signing. Chiquinho, lovely footwork, got you know, found the space, and Martinelli caught up to him and just
went right through the back of him.
Down. So I thought it was a fantastic call to give him two yellows and then a red.
I agree.
Because one stupid challenge on the throw, and you can't do that. You can't impede a throw, and the way he did even push him down was terrible. So definitely yellow card on that. And then to chase after him, not even challenge the ball. He just chopped him to stop the play and a goal scoring opportunity, which it was.
So it was a fast break.
Yeah, it was a fast break. So I thought it was a fantastic call. And for me, Gabriel Martinelli is my batata, my potato of the week, man.
Batata of the week. Yeah, I agree with you. It was two dumb challenges. Two dumb challenges was the push. Okay, if you're gonna go and try to take a purposeful yellow, get the ball.
Yeah.
It's that simple. You know you're going to stop a fast break, so get the ball. Rip the ball out of his hands. Take the yellow card for that. If he's gonna do that, sure. It's still pretty dumb, but you're saving your team from a fast break. Then when you don't get the ball and he still gets a thrown off, you chase the guy down 30 yards and then you take his legs off from behind.
Stupid. And it's childish. It just goes to show you the maturity level, because it's a critical game, like we said before. Dying stage of the game. There's about like 15 to 20 minutes to play at that time. I can't remember the exact minute right now. But he went in and he made a stupid tackle and risked getting a red card. And just to see his reaction.
Oh, he stood there like he did nothing wrong.
He didn't acknowledge it. Second yellow comes out. He's starting to question things. And then he saw the red. And that's when it registered in his brain. He's like, uh-oh. And he tried arguing. But there's not much he could have said or done, because the call was absolutely correct. Fans that say it wasn't two yellow cards for the same player are delusional. They don't know the game. That's just facts. So great call there. And he's definitely my potato of the week.
Patate of the week. And that is the brand new segment, Patate of the week. Thank you, Daniel. Gabriel Martinelli, for starting us off.
Yeah, thank you, Gabriel Martinelli. It's looking like there's going to be an award for the end of the season, the potato of the year. Potato of the year. And
it's going to go to Maguire.
Probably going to go to Maguire. Let's be real.
Probably.
Okay. Anyways.
Another nice segment here.
Player position changes, Daniel. So in honor of Joelinton, the Brazilian from Newcastle, changing from the striking position to playing as an eight. Very weird. Very unorthodox, very unconventional change. Reminds me of, Ronaldo changing from his early days, the Brazilian Ronaldo changing from goalkeeping to being a striker. What a fantastic change that was. But nonetheless, this has inspired this segment, and it's player position changes where players have made the move from a certain position that didn't favor their play to a position that they excelled in. Daniel, why don't you start us off?
Kicking us off, we got Vincent Kompany. A lot of people don't know this. To be honest with you, I knew very little about this myself. Kompany was a midfielder. And then switching to a center back role, like Joelinton, it's just unorthodox. It's like, as a center mid, you're good at everything. You're good at passing the ball, dribbling the ball. You have a little bit of pace to you, which, Kompany didn't really have much of. He was good at he was decent at defending. He had a good strength, a good body, physique. And then all of a sudden, center back. And look where that turned out, because he's probably regarded as a legend of Manchester City, probably an icon of the game. And just a great change. Just a great change for this player.
Daniel, next up, we got the legend, the Man United legend, Antonio Valencia. Daniel, the Ecuadorian, before making his move over to Manchester United, he played for Wigan. And he was a winger, and he also played a little bit as a winger when he moved over from Wigan to United. He even won the what's the award here? The Matt Busby Player of the Year Award, which is a fantastic and esteemed award for Manchester United players. He won that. But Daniel, in 53 matches played, he had 8 goals and 14 assists as a winger. It's not the best of stats.
Not great.
But Daniel, he switched it over, and he ended up being a very hardworking right back. He sort of fit that model of the new fullback, the new modern day fullback, where the fullback not only defends, but, joins the attack, creates the width for the team, and, helps drive the team forward along the flanks. And he was one of those guys that I think of, one of those, pioneers to becoming
pioneer, definitely. Yeah.
So Daniel, what a fantastic change of position for Antonio. And, it was so tough to see him go, because for such a long time, he was that guy for United, a leader.
He was a beast.
And just a hardworking player that put his all into every single challenge.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I loved Valencia. He was so good at that fullback position. He was nuts. He was
beside you said, Vidic too. Oh my god.
Yeah, look at that team. They had Vidic, Rio, Valencia,
Evra.
Ooh. Evra. Oh, team's filthy. Anyways, he was really good at that. He was really good at what he did, and he was a leader because he captained this side with legends and icons of the game. Yeah. If you look at that team that he captained, and he captained, I don't even know how many years he captained for. A couple years. Like, well, how many years? Maybe 4 or 5. Anyways, he captained this side with just legend after legend. And to show how he changed from a winger to a wing back is nuts. And like you said, probably one of the pioneers as to why the fullbacks press up the field so high nowadays, why they get into the attack. They're amazing at passing and dribbling. It's not just all about pacing defending anymore. It's not what it's about. And he was just a phenomenal player for Manchester United.
Daniel, next up.
The third one. Probably the most well-known one, yes. I would like to think.
Yeah.
You got Gareth Bale going from a left back to a right winger. He played 45 games as a left back and 207 games as a right winger. And over his 207 games as a right winger, he had 89 goals, 55 assists, and he won the UCL 4 times.
Yeah, beast. Beast, man. He, you know, he was just that guy for Tottenham when he came, when he made the move over from Southampton, where he started his career. And it was just a fantastic move at the time. He really fit in well with that Tottenham side. And I just remember how overpowered that left foot was, because he had an ability to swiftly cut inside and fire shots off just like Iron Robin, another fantastic winger. And it was just unstoppable. And he made his move over to Real Madrid. It was the right move for him at the time. And, you know, it hasn't panned out these last couple of years. But, you know, looking back, I'm sure a lot of fans could look back fondly because he was just so dominant with Ronaldo and so dominant with Benzema at his time in Real. Just a fantastic servant to that club as well. And he played a major role in several of the Champions League finals, most notably that bicycle kick he scored in the UCL final against Liverpool. So, he just had a fantastic career at Real, and just making that change into becoming a winger was just the right move for him. And it's really, really paid out.
I saw one thing today on social media, which I just want to ask you about quickly. It was, who would you choose in their prime? Listen to this one. You have Gareth Bale, Mo Salah, or Neymar.
That's a tough one.
And I can't lie to you. It was a really good question. Really good question. Because if you look at Salah, he's probably in his prime right now. We don't know, but most likely. He's most likely in his prime years right now. Neymar's prime years were when he was at Barcelona.
Yeah.
And he was a demon at Barcelona.
He was.
And then you got Gareth Bale when he was at Madrid.
Daniel, I would have to go. This is a great question, but I'd have to go with Gareth. I'd go with Gareth just because, one, attitude was fantastic. Attitude was fantastic, and I think that's something that Neymar really lacked in the mindset. Number two, physicality. This guy was a beast, bro. He brought a physicality to the game like not many wingers, because unlike Arjen Robben, he brought physicality. He brought, you know, that strength and control to his game that players like Arjen Robben, you know, lacked. They're more finesse players and more crafty players, right? And then he also brought skill. He brought a lot of skill to the game, and he was very timely in, you know, jumping into a game and changing the game, because when Ronaldo and Benzema were shut down, he was there to help out. And he was just fantastic to watch. I love seeing him in his prime. Fantastic player.
I can't say I agree with you, but I think I have a little bit of bias here just because Neymar was one of my favorite players growing up watching Barcelona, like week in and week out. For me, he was one of the best wingers to do it. Skills, pace, shooting was way better than it is now. Passing was incredible. I don't know. He was just a phenomenal player for me. And that MS sense with Messi, Suarez, Neymar was just gross.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on to the fourth and final. Melo, what do you think?
Last but not least, you know, he's never was a Premier League player. But with that being said, he's a Premier League manager now. And arguably the best of all time. It's none other than Josep Pep Guardiola.
Josep.
Pep started his footballing off as a winger, oddly enough.
Which I did not know.
The story, as it's told, is that Johan Cruyff saw him playing, the legend, Johan Cruyff, saw him playing as a winger, and he said to the coach,
"What are you doing?
What are you doing? What are you doing? This man needs to be playing in front of the defense, distributing the play," and that's what the coach ended up doing. He switched him off. He put him in that position, and boy, what a move it was. And what a, you know, Johan Cruyff, what an eye for the game that man has. RIP. Such a legend. Really knew the game and understood the game like not many people.
Like no other.
Just an amazing football mind, and similar to that of Pep's. And he recognized the ability in Pep, and he changed him and told him to play that position. And, you know, it's revolutionized that position for Barcelona. And he was, you know, in a long line of great sixes for that club. And, you know, now Sergio Busquets, you know, occupies that same position. And it's been a very integral part of that system in Barcelona, where the six, you know, disrupts play, recuperates the ball, and distributes to the rest of his team. And that's what Pep did. He wasn't a flashy guy that scored tons of goals. No, he was the guy that would get the dirty work done and would go unnoticed a lot of the time. And he was, you know, an important reason to why Barcelona had the success they did when he was there. It's not always those fancy, skillful players that deserve the credit. It's guys like Pep, guys like Busquets that, you know, play these positions that are of great importance. And the six is, you know, a very, very important position in any sort of formation you play, whatever formation it is. And he's that anchor, and he was that anchor. So fantastic move in terms of his position.
I don't know if this story is true, but I got to tell you, if it is, with Cruyff telling a manager to switch Pep to
a cool story.
To a CDM, is the coolest thing I've ever heard. It's actually nuts. Like, showing how well Cruyff understood the game is just nuts. It's crazy. And it turned out, Pep turned out to be an icon of the game, and now he's probably going to go down as one of the best managers of all time. So just that parallel there is incredible. It's honestly incredible.
Daniel, that about wraps it up for this episode, episode 14 of PermaTalk Podcast.
We are buzzing as always.
Yes, we are.
I love Daniel. Podcasts. I love it.
You love it, eh? You gotta love it.
Follow us on socials. They have to. Andrew, tell the people. Get followed.
Premier Talk Official, man. Our graphics Premier department. Talk official. Our graphics department has been going hard, man. They've been going hard.
Yeah. Our graphics. Out shout out Julius Rufo with those graphics. We love
shout
it.
Rufo. Shout out Rufo for the graphics.
We pay him too much for his graphics, guys. Yeah,
we do. Let's we gotta revise that. We gotta revise that. Anyways. That about wraps it up for this episode. Thanks for tuning in once again, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care, everyone.
See you later.